Okay. I think that we're firing away. So if you could say your name, that would be terrific.
You just want one name or two names?
Full name and where you live.
Oh, Elva Edna Pickett, 124 Mifford Street, Elwood.
And Desmond Pickett, the same address.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And who wants to start us?
Des. We need to have more to tell you.
What about the first rule about football?
Or the angles.
So you grew up here, did you?
Well, no, I'll tell you part of my life story. I grew up in New South Wales till I was 9 years of age, and then I came over to Victoria, and I came over in one of the coastal steamers, and first of all, I lived up in Adelma Road when I came over here, and went to Victoria Park School, then we moved to 4 Argyle Street, and then to 56 Argyle Street.
So how old were you when you...
I was nine when I came over, yes, and I went to St Kilda Parish School. I lived in Morris St Kilda Elwood area for 71 years, and I belonged to the Life Saving Club down at West St Kilda when I was about 14. I started work when I was 14. I worked at Phoenix Motors at St Kilda Junction for 11 years, and then I played football at St Kilda, 3rd 18 football club down at the Peanut Farm. And I'll tell you a few stories about that. We used to change in, Seppi used to have a butcher shop in Barclay Street, and we used to change in his garage at the back of George Ford and Seppi Ford. They had the butcher shop, and George Ford was the president of the 3rd 18 football club. And I played down there for...
So when you say 3rd 18, does that mean under 18-year-olds?
No, it's the 1st and the 2nd and the 3rd. It's like more or less under about 20 years of age, or 18 years of age. And I played down there for 2 years, and then I went up and played 5 years with St Kilda Football Club up to Junction Oval. And... what else can I say about that?
When did you discover that you love footy? When did you start playing?
Well, when I was in New South Wales, the game over there was rugby, you see, and when you were going to a public school, you'd play rugby. This is even at 8 or 7 years of age, they'd play, and when I came over here, it was a different type of football, but being young and keen to learn, you soon picked it up, you know, kicking a ball and hand passing and all this sort of thing, and... it took me two years before I actually got into the first, and I played about 27 games, met some good friends that we still keep in contact with, like Jimmy Ross. He was my best man and I was his best man, and Keithy Rayshorn. Jimmy was a ruckman and Keithy Rayshorn was a rover, and we still keep in touch with each other, and we met a lot of good friends over there. We used to knock around together, Kenny Mulhall and Jimmy and their wives. There was Molly Keith's wife.
Now, can I just get you to stop there for a second? I might just check on that.
Then we lived down in Western Kilda for quite a few years and didn't more or less do anything, did we? I used to go fishing a lot. That's when I joined the angling club. I joined the angling club in 1953. And I was made a life member about 10 years ago. I mean, we're rather sorry now. I don't go fishing now, but we used to bring home a lot of whiting and snapper. We used to catch a lot of snapper. Biggest snapper was 21 pound 9, and the best bag of whiting I got was about 99, you know, fish in the morning.
That's so nice.
Mm.
Yes. I had to clean them.
I used to clean them, fillet them.
Oh, yes, but
and Elva would debone them, take the ribcage out, you know. But,
And so would you... That would be more than you'd be able to eat yourself.
Oh,
so did you...
Oh, you could give them around. Yes.
And how would you give them around?
Well, neighbours. Neighbours and family, yes. And... Mm. And Albert put some in the deep freeze for the day, so I didn't catch any.
Mm.
And, well, we met a lot of people in the angling club. I mean, what can I say about that? Well, I mean, we used to catch every type of fish, gar, fish, flathead.
So how old were you when you first joined the angling club?
How old was it?
Mm-hmm.
26?
About 26 years of age, yeah. Yeah, so I've been in it for 53 years, yeah. And I've taken Alba out in the boat, but they don't like fishing, and then my daughter, well, they like fishing, but they can't stand the motion of the boat going up and down, you know, made them seasick. And my son, he was keen on fishing, but he did it in a different way. He liked to sort of scuba diving and what do you call it, the other one, snorkeling. And I occasionally used to go flounder spearing. If I caught nine in the night, I was doing well. But him and his friend, they went snorkeling one weekend and they caught 175 flounder. You know, they're just swimming in deeper water and using a special type of spear and just catching these flounder and the fish, they said they caught. And then he also discovered a wreck off Point Ormond Canal, you know, just out from the canal. And he located, it was a very old vessel or whatever it was, and he's written a letter to the Shipwreck Society, hasn't he?
Yes.
And they're trying to define what type of timber was in the wreck.
Yes.
And they're trying to define what era it was in, you know, because it was more or less, they didn't use nails, they used these great big brass or bronze bolts to hold the hull together, and we found quite a few things off it, you know, mostly the timber, and I don't think he found any metal parts, did he?
So how long ago was that?
He probably found it about 15 to 20 years ago, but he didn't say anything about it, you see. He thought it was sort of an early vessel that might have come into Port Phillip before Australia was discovered, you see. It was a really old boat. And, he's notified the shipwreck people now, and he's just waiting on the results. They're going to sort of examine and investigate the timber that was in it. They might be able to find out what country it came from, but he hasn't heard anything since then.
So that's all going on at the moment, is it?
About 12 months ago put it in. They'll be still, you know, investigating it. But,
they're going to take him out and with them to show him because of where they think it is.
They're going to pump around the wreck to try and find where the wreck is and where the anchor is. It's a very big anchor. Trevor has seen it, you know, when he's been snorkeling around. And then what else did we do after that? We joined the game.
So I'd just like to ask a few more questions about the wreck. So he discovered that when he was scuba diving.
When he was scuba diving,
Because Pauline Thompson mentioned that yesterday. She said there used to be a wreck out there, so maybe it was more...
Well, she might know more about it from a historical point of view.
Yes.
So he's only found it, and he's bought up parts, and we've still got parts out in the shed, but they're very, very long faults, like made out of phosphor bronze, and they're about an inch in diameter. And he used to go out there nearly every weekend, you know, he'd try and discover a bit more of the wreck, but you get the sand moving all the time, you might get some rain further up the canal, and it washes all the silt out of the canal and sort of covers it up, you know. It's just a very awkward place to get. And we thought it might have been anchored out of the front of the canal at low tide, because there's all reefs around it. And we think it might have been a northerly wind, and then all of a sudden the wind, when it changed to the west, it blows about 60 k's an hour. And we think that the boat has swung round and the anchor's more or less facing west and the boat's the east. So we think it might have been a very strong westerly wind that came up and put it onto the rocks and then it just sank.
Mm.
We just don't know exactly what happened, but he's always interested, you know, as to what happened, what type of boat it was, whether it was a sailing ship. It's quite large, he said, you know, probably in the 60, 70 foot long. So we're just waiting on the results of that now.
So his discovery of that was a result of your interest in anchoring and fishing?
Well, yes, and snorkeling, and then he graduated to scuba diving. You know, he had the tanks and everything on the back.
And so was there a lot of people that dived and snorkeled and fished?
No, there's only, I think Russ, Michael and who else would it be?
Only Michael and Trevor.
Yeah, well, they were the only ones that really knew that there was a wreck out there, because they never told anyone.
No.
But
they have now.
They have now.
And he has sent in the long, whatever
he's
they
were. He's got all the ship was built with, you know, the bronze,
yes.
Big bronze bolts and everything that go into it.
And does the Shipwreck Society know of its existence?
Yes.
They sent a letter back. I think it might be in there.
Somewhere.
You know, but they said it was a very hard wearing type of wood.
Yes.
Like mainly used like in gears.
Mm-hmm.
Like it might be teak or something like that. But we got a letter back and he took a copy of it and gave it to me. Yeah, so, he found that probably, 47, about 20, at least 20 years ago, wasn't it, he found it, but he didn't say anything about it because he more or less wanted to keep it as his discovery sort of thing, you know. And he wanted to find out more about it unofficially if he could, you know. He looked up all the boat books and all this type of thing to try and find out what sort of a ship it was. I mean, we knew the history of the canal. It used to be like a pig farm down there, and they used to be like an abattoir, and they used to pick up all the carcasses of pigs, and that's like at the mouth of the canal. And we thought it might have been one of those sort of boats, or whether it was a boat that did the dredging at the front of the canal to keep it clear so boats could come up to the abattoirs and take the meat away, like from the pig farm. I think they did mainly pigs down there, like the abattoirs in the early days.
So is the wreck of the age that would have coincided with the...
We don't know. We don't know about the age of the bolts and the timber. If they could pull a bit more of the wreck up, you might find a little bit more. I doubt if you'd find any metal parts, because they'd all be corroded away, you know, anything iron or steel.
So when was the abattoir operating at the canal?
What, the abattoir?
Mm.
Oh, this would be in the early...
Oh, heavens.
Early 1900s or late 1800s, yeah.
So it was long gone by
Not in our day.
Yeah. I mean, we've always been interested in the history of St Kilda. I mean, I've even found a painting by a Dutchman of Point Ormond. I think it would probably be in the late 1800s, as it was in his day, wasn't it? A painter. I've still got it up in the drawer, in the book. They had it down at, who was the auctions?
Leonard Joel.
Matt
Thompson.
No, it was Leonard Joel's auctions, and they put out a catalogue, and they used to put all the paintings in it.
Yes.
And they even put one in the catalogue. So I showed it to Don Taggart, who was in the Historical Society, you know, when he was in charge of it. And I'm trying to think, there's some more about Point. Oh, like, you know, the Elwood Canal, we have heard that Tommy Bent sort of created it. He was trying to make it like Venice. There was a water street. And he was trying to get gondolas to go up and down there. They built the canal and they put these big rings, you know, like to tie the boats up to. And that was many, many years ago. But
do you have an affection for the canal?
Affection?
You've fallen in it, you do.
Well,
I have.
Yes, you fell into it.
Probably in it.
But it's always interesting. Like, we used to have a dog
a boxer. I used to take him for a walk every morning. I'd go around the canal every morning for 8 years, wasn't able to do that. And the number of things that we've seen in the canal, with motor cars driven up Keith Street and straight into the canal, and safes and jewellery, you know, like people have stolen jewellery out of houses down the bridge down, what's the name of the street?
Oh, Ruskin Street, I think.
Ruskin Street, and they've thrown the jewellery into the canal, what they didn't want, apparently, and there's these concrete things that stick out, and they've landed on those, you know. There's quite a bit of jewellery, sort of just cheap jewellery, you know. People used to throw things in the canal, and motor cars, and, well, we found a safe down there one day, and it was floating. So we told the police, of course, and they come and they pulled it out. They pulled a lot of things out of the canal, didn't they? They throw the shopping trolleys in there and everything like that.
But it doesn't happen as much now,
does
it?
No.
Well, I don't think there's as much thieving going on or houses being broken into around this area, you know. But,
so this would have a seedy past or a seedy
I don't know.
I can only tell you about a friend of Elder's that she lived in the Broadway, and she bought this big two-story house, and she lived there for quite a few years, and originally it was a brothel. And they used to have always a two-story house, and they used to have a ladder at the back. And when the police used to raid it, the clients and the madam used to get down the ladder at the back, you see, and there's the back lane at the back, and they'd take off. That was just one of the stories she told.
Don't print that. Mrs. Field from Union May. She might, her family that. Wouldn't want, oh, well, her family would know, wouldn't they?
Well, she told everyone.
Yeah.
Oh,
she told everyone.
We don't need to identify
who
it was.
No,
of course.
So
were there many brothels in
Elwood?
Oh.
Well, I wouldn't know.
No, not
really. I knocked around mainly in St Kilda. I mean, well, it was really, how can you describe it? Like, during the war years, there was that many things happened in St Kilda, you know, when I was knocking around St Kilda, that we used to have a hell of a lot of fun, because St Kilda, when I was growing up from about 14 to 26, it was a fantastic place. I mean, like, for entertainment, I mean, we used to have, you go along the Lower Esplanade, you had the, like the men's bars and the women's bars, and you go a bit further and you come to the scooter boats, which was on the triangle where the pirate pictures is.
What's a scooter boat?
Well, they used to be little boats that were on a pool, and they were driven electrically, and probably about 15 bucks, and you pay so much, and you go and get in the boat, and you drive around. It's like a, oh, it'd be compared to the front door, wouldn't it? Mm. Like as big as that. And alongside of that, there used to be the Looper plane. And then next to that, there was a Lennon called Merry-Go-Round.
Mm-hmm.
And then they used to play, they called it Housy in the old days. And instead of bingo, you get a handful of corn and you get a bingo card, a Housy card. And they call the numbers and you put a piece of corn on the numbers. And that's how they used to play it there. And then we had, next to that was the Polo de Dance. Mm-hmm. And when I was in the Angling Club, there was a chappie, he was the band leader down there, Ern Pettifer. And when I joined the Angling Club, he gave me his locker down there, and he said, if I ever come back, he said, I want my locker back. So this is, this is 50 years ago. And then, of course, Robin was there for Luna Park. And then if you wanted to go to a coffee land, you just walk into Oakland Street, and they had the Yodian coffee vans and the Plaza coffee vans. And Stan Bourne, like Shane Bourne's father, used to be in the Guardian. And I forget the chappie that used to be in the Plaza. He was a good musician.
Horry Dargie.
Horry Dargie and Blue Lions and that, they all members down there. Yeah. And then,
so they were local?
No, no, not necessarily, no. Only entertainers.
Yeah.
They weren't local.
The Leaf had an orchestra, and they'd tell jokes, and they'd drink coffee. It was just terrible copy of it.
So this is the beginning.
Yes.
You had a line up on a Sunday night about 7 o'clock and they wouldn't let you in until about 4 to 8, and it used to be the queue used to go right down Ackland Street.
So which part of Ackland Street was it?
At this end, like the Barclay Street end, like about 50 yards down from the Barclay Street end.
So it was a big place?
Yeah, it was a big queue. Used to go in quite a depth, and it was had quite a decent width in the shop front. And then of course if you went to the Palais Pitching and you couldn't get in, you could always go to the Victory or the Memorial Theatre in Ackland Street. And then if you walked up on the Upper Esplanade, you used to have Palm Grove, which on a Saturday night used to have 5 dance floors going, like 5 bands. And then next to that there was St. Moritz. The entertainment and the transportation was fantastic. Like buses used to come down Rove Street from Caulfield, and they were a little bus like a utility, and people used to sit on either side, probably hold about 10. And we'd come from Caulfield and it would stop at the Upper Esplanade down Rove Street, and the people would get out to go to the Palais Pictures, or anywhere else, Luna Park or anything like that.
And there was Candy Corner opposite.
Candy Corner. They created Candy Corner, it was about 1946 or something like that, but it was an American type milk bar. And they used to have all the latest drinks and malted milk. There used to be Giovanna Frost, Ice Muddle Lemon.
Mm. We all used to meet there.
Yeah.
On a Sunday afternoon, you'd all go down to St Kilda.
Yeah.
All his girlfriends would all go down, and we all meet at Candy Corner, and that was where, just alongside where McDonald's is on the Esplanade, I think it was where the police rescue.
The Green Knoll Cafe.
It
was right next to it.
That's where McDonald's would have been. That was a dance.
Like you could have a meal there and wine.
Yeah, and dance.
And dance, yeah.
That's right. And then there was the...
But the fellow pictures at half, but intervals at half time, the people, like they used to have a thing inside to sell soft drinks and chocolate, but the majority of people would shoot straight out of the Candy Corner, Fantastic.
That was the meeting place.
Yeah. Especially on the Sunday.
And so was there many places in Elwood, or was that more...
No, we didn't have them in Elwood.
The only big place in Elwood, the Maison Deluxe over here on the corner of Glen Huntley Road and the Broadway.
Yes.
That was a very big dance hall. A lot of people used to come from everywhere to go there. That was a big dance hall.
Yes.
And what happened to that?
Pulled down.
It was pulled down and...
Did people stop going?
I don't know.
Well, it went out of fashion, It went out of fashion, like all the theatres. They all went out of fashion when TV came in. But that was the only place you could go to. I mean, if you want to go to the movies around here in those days, you had the Palais Pictures, the Victory, the Memorial, had the Broadway Theatre
over here, and there was
the Renown, the Esquire, and the Windsor, the Astor.
Yes.
So there's all these movie theatres all around this area, I mean, everyone used to go. You could go to a different movie theatre. Movie show every night of the week if you wanted to.
Yes, but there wasn't much for Elwood. We had to go to St Kilda.
Yeah,
the Candy Corner, that area.
I mean, a lot of people in Elwood seem to love living in Elwood because it's away from St Kilda, but
that's
they also
right.
like to close to St Kilda as well.
That's
so
true.
You talk about having the best of both worlds.
That's true, yes.
Yeah.
That's what it was, yes. Yes.
Well, we used to meet the young people, Elva and all the girlfriends and myself and the boyfriends, we used to all meet down on the lawns down between the bars and the pier. And there used to be a lovely grassed-in area. And we'd all meet there, take a portable gramophone down there, and we'd play it, and everyone would be sort of dancing around. There were a few boxes that was Lenny Young. I haven't seen him for a while, but he used to knock around down there. He was a Victorian champion featherweight. And there was another chap, Sol Hamilton. He got mixed up in the underworld. He was, when I was working at Phoenix Motors, I got to know a chap that he got a job up there. His name was Norman Edwin Bradshaw. I don't know whether you've ever heard of him. He was a gangster, and his mate Freddie Harrison. And Freddie Harrison got shot on the pier one day. He got shot with a shotgun down there. There's about 70 or 80 people around him when someone shot him with a shotgun, and no one saw it. I mean, they were all standing around, but no one would sort of say anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to have an SP rookie thing. They'd go around. Huh?
No.
Did
he
survive?
Died.
Oh, no, he died. Yeah, and Norman Edwin Bradshaw, he went down, he was in a plane one day, and they were circling around the Mornington Pier, and they went down on too far, and the plane just dropped into the water, and of course he got drowned. And
in Faulkner Street was a, well, that didn't have a good name. Faulkner Street, we had a pretty Dulcie lived there, because my girlfriend lived there. Two of my girlfriends lived down there.
Oh, it was a tough street.
No, that was a tough street.
Gretel Lewis.
Oh, yeah. And the hotel on the corner. What did they call that?
The Bloodhouse.
The Blood.
And that's Pinchorda,
yeah. Yeah, that's Pinchorda, yeah. Elwood was the more reserved. Elwood was more reserved.
Yeah. People used to, well, it was more, well, it's a two-rate Elwood, you know. St Kilda was the entertainment centre. I mean, if you wanted any entertainment, you'd go down there. I mean, there's, well, we used to watch, well, we used to go to the billiard halls and there'd be Ron Troy. I don't know if you've heard of the Taiping Cafe up St Kilda Junction. That's been there for 50, 60 years.
Yes.
Or his father used to own it, and his son, he's not now St Kilda, his name was Ron Troy. And his father used to own it, but there was him and there was a couple of other chaps, Billy Judd. Well, one night I went out with the boys and we met up at the United Nations North Park in Fitzroy Street. And the chap came in and he was talking to us and he said, I've just sold my hotel. He said, would you boys like to go out for the night? So we all looked at each other, you know. So anyway, we agreed to it, so we went out and he had a Riley car and he took us over to a, he had a flat in Queen's Road, and of course in those days, beer and everything like that was hard to get, so he said, would you like a drink? And all he had was stout and gin. And it was shocking, you know, mixing the two together.
Oh, yuck!
You know, and anyway, what he took us into,
the Borg.
That was later on. We went into Little Bourke Street and there was a chap there who, he used to live in Waterloo Street behind where I used to live in Nargold Street, and his name was probably Doug, so we could. And he, they went in, Bob Bibby and this chap, they went in there and they were playing, what's that game they play, the Chinese and that? It's
Baccarat?
Baccarat, yeah. And they went in there anyway, they were in there for about a quarter of an hour, so I went up and knocked on the door. And had a glass panel of Billy Judd sitting there, with a 45 sitting, you know, on his knee. And then we told him what we wanted, and he brought the break out again, and we finished that cup going down the Middle Park and having a swim. In your underpants?
And you were there?
No!
That's
the boy. No.
So then I came home. And then I had me 2 years in, I guess the front door, the door won't actually, it's padlocked from inside. No one put the padlock on, I was supposed to be home, you know, I hadn't arrived home that night, so she locked me out and finished up. We went down the park and we had a bit of a sleep down there before we came home, because she must have walked into the room and saw the bed hadn't been slept in and all that.
What he did.
So, going back to the angling club, so it's a clubhouse. Yes. It was burnt down in 1957. It used to be a wooden timber house, and during the time that it got burnt down to the time it was rebuilt, Ormond Angling Club, they said we could use their club rooms, and that was up in Ormond Road in Ormond. And it took about 12 months to build it, but most of it was done with volunteer labour from within the club, because we had a lot of good tradesmen in the club, like bricklayers and plumbers and carpenters and that. And I went down and gave them a hand, like it was a chap named Bert Petherbridge. Well, he was one of the original members down there, he was a life member. And I gave them a hand that they built 88 rod lockers, you know, to put your rods in, and I gave them a hand to it. And there's another chap down there, he used to build staircases, you know, and they were good old trades, and they used to even use tomahawks, you know, like for making something fit. So they'd be razor sharp, and they'd be just hacking away at the wood, you know, but they were just as good as though they were using a plane, you know, they were very good at it. And from 57, it was a beautiful club, and you know, we used to have, say, there was 40 private boats in the club, and about 5 club boats. And in those days, the rate of the club boat was 2 shillings, it was for half a day. And those were the good old days, as they might say, because there was tons of snapper around. I mean, you could go out, catch 4 or 5 snapper, you know, like the average weight used to be about 10 pounds, like for the snapper. But you used to catch sometimes 4 or 5 pounds, and you'd get a lot of 15, 17 pounds, but they used to average about 10 pounds. But sadly now, the club, once they started, we got a short of members, and so they started letting boats come into the club. The club had been built especially for boats up to 14 feet in length, you know, the uprights and everything, so many boats sitting in between. Then they started letting the bigger boats in, like 16 and 18 footers. And then after that, the club sort of dissolved, because when there were all boats of a certain length, everyone used to go out from the club. And when you came in, you'd give your friend a hand to pull the boat up and put it up on the hoist, and then, you know, pull it up to the club. And then when they got the bigger boats in the club, they didn't launch from down there. They would go down and kick on the marina. So we didn't see the chaps in the bigger boats, you see. And then we didn't get to know them socially or anything like that. You know, there was just two lots of chaps in the club. There was the blokes that had their boats in the club, and the other blokes that used to launch down the marina. And they were their bigger boats.
But also...
they used the club as a...
Storage. Yeah, they used to use the club as a storage.
But also, you had your fishing days, and you did donated the fish to the Anzac Hostel.
Oh yeah, that's right. We used to have what they called a hospital Sunday. And one day a year, this is shortly after the war, the Second World War, and we used to go out and we'd catch flathead, like for the Anzac Hostel, which is down in North Road, and all the return servicemen that were cooked down there. So we used to call it Hospital Sunday. And we used to just go out and donate everything we used to catch. Well, I mean, they used to catch 500 or 600 pounds of flathead, you know. Occasionally they'd catch a few snapper, but they'd all go in. And they used to take it down there and they'd deep freeze it. We used to clean it all, and then they'd put it in the bed for you down there and keep it for the, you know, the return service when they were, had been injured during the war, and that, or of course some, you know, disease or something like that.
And then they had Ladies' Day. We used to have Ladies' Day at the Elwood Anglican Club, and we used to have lovely afternoons and nearly out, are you? Lovely afternoons for, and have the fish. And
yeah.
Men used to cook the fish.
Yeah.
And sure,
and they cooked them.
Oh,
well,
they had beautiful kitchen down there. Yeah.
The way they cooked them, there's a certain way of cleaning a flathead, and you don't have any bones in it. And they cook them. They just cut them, and then they just tear it, and it takes all the ribs out of the rib cage and everything like that to make a special batter. You know, they put it in the fridge overnight. Well, that'd be beer batter, I suppose. They used to keep it a secret, the
they wouldn't tell us.
And then there's another chap in the club, his name was Jack Scanlon. He worked with some stove company. So he knocked up about 4 big electric deep fryers. And then we used to, I think they used to take about 3 gallons of oil in each one, you know. So the more fish you put in, the cooler the oil gets, so they built these ones with plenty of oil, and when they dropped the fish in, they might put 15 or 20 fillets in at a time. It wouldn't cool the oil down because it had such a good quantity of it, you know. But we used to invite the Lord Mayor, and usually we'd present him with a snapper.
And the councillors.
Yeah, and the councillors used to all be invited in those days before we became a city of Portsmouth. And Brian Dixon, he was a member like of the state government. He used to live down on the canal down near the mouth. And of course, he got an invitation. And he used to play football with Melbourne. He used to play on the wing. But he only did that for about 2 years because then he got invitations to Caulfield Racecourse, you know, like, and he would rather go to the Caulfield Racecourse and more social sort of life than down at the Anglian Club, which was sort of, you know, working man's. It was a working man's club, really, you know. Really, the town is still going. They got the same principle. Anything that wants doing in the club, they just ask the members and someone will come forward and do a bowl of cricket, that's the only way.
But this doesn't happen.
Not now, no.
When did it stop? Being a voluntary, probably, you must say
they
had 20 years ago.
Yes, but they had worked in the club, Wayne Durain, and then changed the club around to see them. But
they get new office bearers in, and then we had a chap, Wayne Durain. His father used to be the president of the garden club, but he did a hell of a lot of voluntary work, you know, down the club. But he couldn't get people to help him because they didn't know how to do anything. So he more or less set an example, and he'd work, he converted the, we had to get rid of the locker room because we were losing the members and they didn't keep their rods and that in the lockers, you see. So we had to take that away, take the wall away and take all the lockers out and make it a bigger room socially. And now they let it out for wedding receptions and things like this, you know, at a pretty cheap rate. But it doesn't go well with the club. I mean, they say, oh, you can't come down on Saturday because there's a wedding on, a reception on down there, you know, and you can't go down there. So then they
had Father Christmas Day and...
Oh, yeah, they used to, for the kids.
Yeah.
Father Christmas used to, they used to take him down to North Road and one of the boats in the club would go down and pick him up. North Road jetty, then they'd bring him back to the ramp, they'd have all the kids waiting on the ramp, you see, and what they used to do is, up to a month beforehand, the parents would bring their presents down, you see, and then Father Christmas, they used to take all the presents down, and when he'd come in, he'd have his big bag, you know, with all the parents would buy the presents for nothing over $10, they say. So then they'd distribute all, they'd go up to the club rooms and they'd bale the hay and that's for all the kids to sit on. And then they used to distribute the Christmas gifts, you know, to the kids, and they used to be wrapped in
Yes, and they also took turns in presenting the Lady Mary's with a bunch of flowers, you know, you had to get them in their best clothes, and that was exciting. Your daughter was going up to present the snapper and the bunch of flowers and different parents. They all had a turn.
Do a little curtsy and present her with a flower. Yeah, you know, this is our daughter. She was sick. She's 51 now.
So we did all that, and we had a lot of happy memories at Elwood and the club.
Oh, yes.
And the garden club.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm always curious about, you know, because I talk to a lot of people about their memories, and I often wonder whether or not, you know, people are still accumulating those happy times. Things might happen last week that form a fabulous memory as well. Yeah. I mean, was it the good old days, or is it still the good days? Are there still things that happen, even although the community is dispersed somewhat?
Well, I don't think the days are as happy as what they used to be, because when you're younger, you remember everything. I can remember. You know, what happened when I was working and all that sort of thing, but I can't remember what happened 2 weeks ago.
No, he can't remember.
Is it about
in
memory, or is it about what you're actually...
Well, I think it doesn't keep your brain active. Like, with me, it's natural now. I find it very hard to see. I've either got to have a reading lamp or go outside to read, and it takes my interest away from reading now. So I don't read as much So the brain's getting more inactive than what it used to be, you know. You should always be something to do, but now if you're going to do something tomorrow, you forget it.
Yes, but in our days, we didn't have television, and we had the clubs to go to and those sort of things. You know, we got a lot of pressure out of those. You don't forget them. We don't forget them.
No.
Because to us, that were happy days, you know. But now it's just more or less television.
And the people don't group together.
No. Oh, well, unfortunately, our age group, they're all passing away, so there's not many of us left. So.
Well, it's like today, you make comparisons of yesteryear, as you say. When I was playing football, I used to get £3 a week. And I thought, oh, this is terrific, you know, £3. That was about half the average working wage. But now you'll get the players, top players, they get up to $20,000 a match, you know.
But when he was playing football, they used to have lovely dances at the football club, you know, in Fitzroy Street, and that's where we made all our friends there, and, you know, we haven't forgotten those things, because we all enjoyed that.
So, I mean, what you're describing is something about, you know, big social networks and social events where
there are more social than those days, and people would invite you more into their homes. It's like typical when I was courting Elder, I'd come down here, and Elder's mother and father lived in this house, you know, in the early days. And you'd come down, and you know, you'd only be here for about a quarter of an hour, and she'd be serving you up hot scones, you know, like. She'd have a 1-5 stove over, you know, that cast iron stove you used to put the wood in. That, in the winter time, they'd be going all the time. And if you came in, she'd look up the passage or she'd let you in, and the next minute she'd come in with a cup of tea and hot scones, you know. But it's not very social now. I mean, like we used to have a lot of fun down the club. The Anglican club, we used to have a dinner down there every couple of months. And we put on like half a crayfish. Well, it cost $10. Well, now Basilicus down in Berkeley Street, you go down there and you've got to buy $40 $40 a kilo.
Mm.
If you only buy two, it's about $50, you know. I mean, well, I suppose, well, in those days we were retired, we were on the pension, but you can't afford as much now as what you could. You know, it's like, you've got so many interests, just like now I've got to get rid of my car, or last week, which is, you know, I really miss it. But now we go around everywhere in a taxi, you know, like, it's not the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the spur of the moment, you say, well, let's go over to the RSL, or, you know, and you just go out and get in the car and go over there in 2 minutes, now you've got to bring up a taxi and it's a quarter of an hour, 40 minutes before they arrive.
Do you need a community bus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I don't very often go over to Balaclava.
It's only every hour, I think, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But it's very good. I used to go up to a friend up Keith Street, and I used to go swimming at St Kilda Baths and catch the community bus every week. But I don't use it now.
St Kilda Baths?
Oh, St Kilda, Elmer Road, I beg your
pardon. Oh, Elmer Road, cool.
Elmer Road, cool.
Mm.
But, no, I don't use it because I can't carry things now. So, unfortunately, I've got to have them delivered from Safeway. You're getting a new bus, yes. Yeah, we were over there the other day. We were sitting near you, but we didn't know who you were, of course. But no, that was very interesting. It was lovely because we didn't know all those things that happened.
Together at one meeting.
Yes,
but,
yes.
See, I used to know John Privish fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he used to knock me on. Before he got married, I've got a bit of a grudge on the council to the trees. You know, and the leaves is like, I'm at a stage now where I can't, well, I couldn't still get up in the roof, but I don't want it. I mean, it's too dangerous. And the trees out here, they let them grow. I mean, nowadays, we've got all the books on the history of St Kilda and all that, you know. Because everything has changed so much. Like in, when we were younger, the labour costs for people wasn't very much. It would be dirt cheap, so your wages were nothing. So they had the council, before they completely changed, because they got rid of so many human beings, that because of the labour costs, but they used to have, like in springtime, they'd come along and they'd prune all the trees. They'd get three up each tree with pruning shears and everything like that. And they used to, you cut the branches up to a certain height, there's a term for it. Anyway, the trees used to always be neat and tidy and low, but give a lot of shade. And then when labour costs went up, because they got rid of so many people then, they don't cut the trees now for 20-25 years. I mean, people used to grow annuals in their front garden, now they grow ferns because they can't get any sunlight. You know, I mean, it's completely changed. The trees used to be short and the branches used to be nice and fresh, but now...
So they're pine trees, aren't they?
Yes.
And that's right.
And they block up the drain. Yes.
They used to do this.
Well, they're meeting in the centre of the road now.
Yes.
Which, you ask any of the councillors or anything like this about them, they say, the people that drive through here, they say the trees are beautiful. But they're not here in the autumn time, you know, we get bags and bags. I could go out every day and get a couple of great big rubbish bins full, couldn't I, out of the garden, you know, rake the leaves up in the autumn, you know.
They won't be able to cut them out of the cherry trees because they're too high.
Mm.
And the roots are going under the houses too.
Yeah. Mm. One year we came home, we went out Christmas Eve and we came home, rained like mad. We came home and the roof had collapsed in here. A couple of these pine tree leaves had got across the downpipe, and of course we've got a gully gutting up there and the water just came over onto the roof in here and the ceiling just collapsed.
That's
just one of the grudges.
So just going back to the footy and so on. So were you a bit of a, would people recognise you in the streets?
A little bit, but you had to be down St Kilda, like, and you go down to a football match. But there were some notable personalities. I mean, when I first got over there was Keith Miller. You've heard of Keith Miller. He played cricket for Australia. He played in the Invincible side. And he sort of come back from the war. He was like a fighter pilot in England. And he came back here, and there was Keith Miller, Sammy Roxton, and there was also the chap that, you know, when Darwin had its hurricane and they had to completely rebuild it, well, the chap that did that, his name was Stretton. He played over the same time when I was playing. He was a major, I think, in those days. When he went up to Darwin, he was a major general, Alan Stretton. He played in the ruck with Jimmy Ross. But, you know, they were the notable personalities. You know, but there was a certain race. Peter Bennett. He used to belong to the life-saving club down here at Elwood. And he represented Australia in the 1946 water polo team. His brother, Billy. And one of our ex-presidents, well, he died 2 years ago, his name was Stan Bell, Commander Stan Bell. He was also the president of the life-saving club down there. He was also the president of the Caulfield RSL up in St George's Road. But he got hit by a car. I mean, he didn't last long after that, but he was 94. You know, he was a terrific disciplinarian. I mean, down the club, you know, if anyone played up, he'd be right off of it. He'd just say half a dozen words and they'd all sit there like that.
Yeah, but the old life-saving club was on the corner of Heath Street. There used to be a target, a rifle range.
Yeah, they used to have the rifle butts down there. I went along there with the place to go on the beach.
With a
metal detector.
There was a rifle range near Head Street.
Yes. Used to be like butts, so they call them. They used to fire from back.
What's
that? Like a rifle butt. They used to have mounds of earth to stop the bullets, and they used to have targets on them, and a lot of those bullets. Yeah. They used to use these Martini Henry buffalo rifles, and they had a lead thing, the bullet was about half an inch in diameter. And they used to go over the rifle butts, and there used to be a reef just out from the ice saving club, and I mean, a very low tide with a north wind that used to blow the tide out and expose the reef. And you'd go out there, and they used to get these, the bullet heads off Martini Henry rifles, and about a few gold rings and a few coins, you know, the old two shillings and sixpences and such. So they used to fly over the guns, and they used to go over the top of the butts occasionally, you know, and they just land in the water.
And you wouldn't go fishing there, obviously.
No, well, I see.
Well, that was a long time before you joined the angling club.
I went over, we used to go over the channel, you know, we used to take a lot of risks, it was silly risky in those days. One day I went over to Williamstown, they said they're getting a lot of snapper over there. So I went in behind the rifle range. I'd forgotten completely about it. We're sitting there, pull the salami in the water. So we pulled the anchor up, we came away as fast as we could, but we didn't realise at the time that they used to publish it in the Sun every day when there was going to be firing over in the rifle range, you know, at Williamstown. And then they used to have, like during the war years, you had to get a special pass to go out in the bay, like with a petrol engine. And they used to have like a Corvette towing a target, and they'd be out there with both those guns, you know, trying to hit the target. And then when we go out fishing out over in the middle of the bay over there, you could hear the machine guns going at Williamstown, you know, they used to do all target practice and that.
This is the Elwood Life Saving Club. In our day, only the elite went there, got invited, didn't they? The elite people went there, not just ordinary people.
And why do you think that was?
What was most likely who mixed with who, I suppose, in those days.
So it was a clique.
Yes.
In there, and
yes.
You only got to join
in if you were... Or you only just got invited. Yes, but no, but it had a very... You know, it was very popular, I should say.
Elwood was more refined than St Kilda. I mean, St Kilda was very cosmopolitan. They had all types down St Kilda, you know. You'd have a few gentlemen, there was a few of us left. But mostly they'd all be tough, you know, like in a lot of migrants and things like that. I'm not condemning migrants or anything like that, but so you got so many mixed type of people, whereas in Elwood, they were a better class of people, more quiet, like bank managers and things like this, you know.
And then there was the Elwood Sailing Club. It was next door to the Angling Club.
They used to call it the Seahorse Club.
Yeah, that's right.
They used to have they're actually big canoes, and they used to go out in them, and they have a seahorse on their sails, and they get two or three boats in one of these seahorses, you know. And Elvis had a few relations in there, didn't he? Bill Johansson and a few of those. They were the early foundation members of the sailing club. Now it's the catamaran club, you know. They have a lot of races down there, and they have about three or four. And I think they're just getting it ready now for the Commonwealth Games. They usually house a lot of yachts. They have a certain class of yacht racing down there in the Commonwealth Games, and they're going to put up big fences, you know, and they put the... with all the yachts that, you know, protect them, stop them from getting creased or marked.
So, I mean, from the picture I'm getting is that if you lived in Elwood, then, you know, your recreation was around the sea, you know, it was fishing or sailing or life saving, that it was. Whereas if it seems now that...
And dancing. There was only one dance hall, that was the...
Yes.
Yeah, that was around there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, well, the Elwood Beach always used to be full of people.
Well,
it was packed night after night in the summer. Wasn't it?
Yeah, before the pollution.
No.
See, we used to get
because of the parking, beg your pardon, because of the see, people can't always pay for the
parking. There used to be free parking down there,
free parking,
and then we had the Elwood Canal coming out down here, and down further we had the Head Street drain coming out, and if it rained, and if the tide was sort of running in, you used to get the Head Street drain running along the Elwood Beach, and if the tide was running out, you used to get the Elwood Canal running along the Elwood Beach. And there used to be, in the early days when I was in the club, there used to be up to, I'd say, 100,000 on the beach. Between Point Ormond and Head Street, there'd be 100,000 people on the beach. And we had great trouble, and they used to emphasise this down the club, when you're coming in from fishing, we'd cut our engines off 100 yards out from the shore and rowing, because you never knew what the kids were going to do, because a lot of them used to purposely, they'd dive in front of, dive under your boat, like as you were coming in. And if you had the engine going, like the propellers, I mean, they could see you for everything you had. But there used to be a good 100,000 down there, didn't there?
Used to be, yes.
Was that irritating sometimes? Did you feel a bit like, oh,
I don't think so. No.
If you got down there early, well, they used to get in the tea tree, like back from the beach. They used to erect little tents and covers and everything like this, and they'd, well, especially the migrants used to come down, they'd have their watermelon. But on the beach, this used to be packed from the path to the water's edge, you know.
You may have a kiosk down there. We used to be able to buy your billy water, hot water.
You used to take your bill, always take your billy down the beach if you're going down for the day, and some packaged tea and a bit of milk and that. And they go to, there used to be a lagoon, the Blue Lagoon used to be the kiosk down here, just near the angling club. And people would go up and get a billy full of hot water. You'd charge your threepence or sixpence, you know, for billy, and take it back, and they'd have a cup of tea. People used to be mad on cups of tea, didn't they?
Yeah, those days. Well, that's all we had.
They never used to drink coffee or anything,
did they? No,
it was
tea. And then there was the bowling club down there. Remember the bowling club? Oh, the bowling club was down there. That was a very popular, where the cafe, where the restaurant is.
A lot of the chaps used to go on to the bowling club. They used to actually belong to the angling club, and they'd go out fishing in the morning. And when they'd come in, then they'd go home and get dressed, and they'd go down and bowl all the afternoon, you know, at the bowling club.
Mm.
I'm going to turn this off for a sec.
No, it's still going, is it?
I
thought it stopped.
Anyway.
Oh.
Well, it isn't.
A Majestic Hotel in Fitzroy Street, and an architect's model of the George Hotel in Fitzroy Street.
Oh, how fabulous.
And I've got them, I've bought them off Popper, you know.
Them out the bedroom.
Yes, that's the George Hotel on the corner of Grey Street and Fitzroy Street. Yeah, I bought them years ago. And it's actually, apparently the architects did renovations in there, but they built them as to scale. I've got them up in the bedroom. And actually a friend of mine, when I was playing with the 3rd 18 football club, there used to be a secretary, was Frank Sheridan. He finished up, he was the manager of the George Hotel for quite a few years, you know. But there used to be, when we were in the Historical Society, there was a girl down there, she wrote the history of the George Hotel.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, we didn't have them then, I mean, it was only that is about that square.
Oh, I'd love to have a look at
it. Oh, you can have a look at it.
And it's got a perfect cover over on that Fitzroy Street with a car park out the front. But fantastic, you know, it's the scale.
Mm.
Yeah, quite a large building.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, but I thought that'd be of interest to someone.
But we don't know who, but we'd love to know who, because they can have them.
Because
I hope
they're you know, I think they're really icons of, I mean, in Fitzroy Street, I mean, I used to work at the junction, and I used to walk from Western Kilda, I used to walk across the park near the football ground, across to the junction, and there was all these hotels. I mean, I've got even photo one here, one big one.
I gave her a little box and it had the George Hotel, and Des bought a present for his mother from there, so I gave her a little box of
the
room.
The old St Kilda Junction.
Oh,
fabulous. And I used to live just up the road from there, up in High Street, 41 High Street, but there used to be there was two hotels there, one on the corner of Barclay and High Street, and the other one on the corner of Fitzroy Street and Barclay Street. And then when you went down Fitzroy Street, there was the Ritz, and then the Majestic, then the George, then the Prince of Wales, and around the corner was the Esplanade.
Mm.
You know, it used to be such a tourist attraction. In the early days, all the farmers used to come down to St Kilda, and they could stay at all those hotels, you know, Fitzroy Street. It used to be fantastic in the old days.
Mm. Well, that's what it looked like once. Mm.
Oh, it's a great photo,
eh? Mm. Yeah, there's a whole lot of buildings have come down, those big pubs.
Oh,
the chap, yeah, where is that one there?
Mm.
His name is O'Brien.
But he's the one...
He was in...
Was that the pub that he sold? And he went in...
The pub that he sold?
But who was the fellow that...
Oh, no,
oh, no,
that was another story.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no. I used to know the chap that owned that hotel. He used to come over to St Kilda Footy Club. He was on the committee, I think, a chap named O'Brien. And then with that, I used to live down near that, the Beaconsfield Hotel. And what's the other one down West St Kilda? Where the cricketer got killed there.
Oh, Beaconsfield Hotel.
Beaconsfield Hotel. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, there used to be a, we used to live around there for years and years, and there used to be Crookie the Milky, and he used to run his horses up there to St Kilda Station along the railway line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I've got a few questions already. So, you were born...
Mm.
Do you want to tell me
that? I was just born in 136 Milford Street, and then later on we moved down to here.
In 1929?
Yes, I was born in 1929, and then Mum and Dad moved down here.
And
I've got no idea. Maybe the rent went up. I don't know, but they came down here and been here ever since, you know. So.
So they rented
that
house down there,
and rented this house.
And this one.
Yes, and until the owner decided to sell it, and then they bought it. They bought it through war service. Yeah. They bought it through war service. So I've been here ever since.
And so when you got married, were your parents still alive?
Yes, and living in this house.
Yeah. So you shared
where did we go? Can't remember.
Well, we went up to Murrumbeen after we got married. We picked out a place in St Kilda, and I won't mention the estate agent's name, but he wanted, like in those days after the war, accommodation was very hard to get, and the estate agents wanted key money. So we picked out a place, it was a flat or something, wasn't
it? Yes. Opposite the Victory Theatre.
I think you wanted, what, £600?
Yes.
So we were quite prepared to pay that to go into it.
To get a place, because
you couldn't get a job there.
You couldn't get anywhere.
So
that was like the bond.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
there wasn't even...
No, it was quite a
money. Your pocket to get you into that unit.
And then you had to rent it.
And then you didn't get it back.
No, you lost it.
No.
So anyway, we decided we'd go in and we said to him, we'll pay the key money. So then he must have got a higher offer, 700 or 800. And of course then he said, no, you can't go. It's just not available. It was up to Murrumbeen, and we lived up Murrumbeen for about 9 months.
Yes, that's after you finished playing for St Kilda.
Then we finished, we went down to
Fitzroy Street.
So I mean, that was an experience on the same. We used to live in one of those tenement houses. The second story up, overlooking Fitzroy Street, you know, and you could see all
one room.
Women of the night, and that walking up and down.
One room, yes.
And,
we had
some, like, the people that rented it to us, they were terrific, you know, they were terrific people, and they used to have a bloke up there, what was his name? We used to, he'd get full, and then he'd, we'd say, right, I'd go outside, and then he'd go outside, and then he'd come in, and he'd push the door open, and he'd sing Jealousy in it. And the quavering voice, you know, that was his specialty.
Yes, no, we just had one room up there with a bed with a K-pop mattress. When he got on it, it went to the wire.
Yeah.
Then we asked them, could we have a refrigerator? And they let us have that. And then we had a little tiny kitchen, as big as a table here, and but you had to share the bathroom as well. But we remained friends with them for years and years.
The Loonies.
Yes, that's right. So... So where did we go from there?
We went down to Longmore Street.
Oh, that's right, yes. We went down
my
to
mother and father had bought a house over in Norman Road. So we carried on renting a place down there for about 5 or 6 years, I suppose.
Yes.
No. No, because we moved down here when Trevor was one.
Yes.
So that was in 1958.
Yes. So anyhow, my mother died, and so we came down here to look after Dad. And
yeah,
he didn't
look after him
for a while, and then he passed away.
Mm.
So that's why we're here. Still here. So don't want to move from Elwood. You ask most people, and nobody, they always want to come back to Elwood. We've got neighbours in the street up here that they lived here years ago, and they've come back.
Is that right?
Yes. They want to come back to Elwood.
Mm.
Yes.
Because we think it's a terrific position with it. Park over there, like it can never be built on, and since we've been here they put all the trees in and brought all the birds back, you know, like about an hour before dusk all the birds start chirping in the trees over there, you know.
But we're lucky we've got the park opposite our place.
Yeah.
Very lucky we've got the school park. And
yeah, kids went from Elwood.
Where did you go to school?
Down here, at Elwood.
At Scott Street?
Yes. Scott Street, yes.
Yeah.
They started as the babies, and then that only went up to grade 8, and then I went to Matt Robinson Girls High for 12 months, and I wasn't academic enough there, so.
Then the children went up there, didn't
well,
they?
Well, our children have gone up there.
They went up to Scott Street,
and
the old
college, yeah.
And, You, when we talked on the phone, you said that you decided to do an apprenticeship.
Yes. With
me. And I asked you why?
Oh, I told you that. Well, my mum didn't know what to do with me. So she was offered. Miss Goodwin came around and said she wanted a young lass to start the apprenticeship.
Yes,
and would mum be interested? And she said yes. So that's where I went.
Couldn't get rid of it quick enough.
And I went up and down that hill in Kendall Street, walked every day and back from lunch and up, and that's when I was nice and slim. And so I did the apprenticeship there, and then later on I
had
went.
Did they have a natter in the street? How did she
know? Oh, she knew. Well, the mother lived around the corner, so they must have had a natter. They must have, because my mother was English and Mrs. Storr's mother was English.
Mm.
And I think... But they must have known each other. I don't know, but that's what I was told. Yeah.
And what kind of people went to a dressmaker?
Oh, very exclusive people. Where I worked, they were all exclusive people, yes. Society people, they made for.
And was it for around here in Elwood, or?
Oh, no, different areas, Malvern and all that sort of areas, yes. And Mrs. Fields, she had... or elite people for her 2 years.
And so what was the process for somebody coming the door, and what would happen, you know?
Oh, well, we...
It's
a home in Kendall Street, and the customers came in the front door into a workroom which was further along, and we had so many girls working there. And then she'd do all the work and just fit them in the front room.
Did
you
ever decide what they wanted?
Could that be a pattern? I wouldn't know. The most likely had that, well, you weren't told those things in those days.
So did you cut it?
No, we weren't allowed to cut, no, only so. No, we weren't allowed to cut. She used to cut out at night time when we were there. Mm.
And who were the other girls that worked there?
Oh, it was their sister worked there, Doris, and I was friends with her for years and years and years because she lived around the corner, and then there was Becky somebody, and oh, I can't remember their name.
Did you stay with them?
No, no.
And was it a happy environment?
Yes, it was, yes, no. No, no, it was very nice. And she looked after. She looked after.
And were you allowed to talk while you were there?
Oh, no. Head down and off. Oh, no. She used to have the radio going at the back of her, and he used to listen to the radio. And her husband used to make, he had a little bungalow out the back, and he used to make all the buttons. You know how they used to make buttons, cover buttons and things? Yes, well, that was his job. That was Arthur's job. Arthur's job. Well, in that day, those days, you had to hang on to your jobs because you just couldn't walk out, could you, in those days? In our day, you couldn't.
No,
you couldn't just say, "I'm not coming back." You wouldn't get it. It was very hard to get another job.
Mm. And did you make your own clothes as well?
Yes, I used to. Yes. Mm.
And were you interested in?
No, I wasn't. No. Oh, only to go to some sort of football balls and things like that. But no, I wasn't that way so much inclined as some people were. You know. But I used to make my own clothes and all my children's clothes. And that.
And was there, you know, a drapery shop around here where you buy?
No, you'd have to go to Paran or somewhere, I presume, because we didn't have tests and things like that, did we? In those days, we didn't. No.
And how long did you work there for?
Oh, I served my apprenticeship. What was it? Three years.
Mm.
Yes, it was 3 years though.
And then. And then,
I left, and my mother knew Mrs. Field, and she wanted a girl over here, so I left Miss Goodwin. It was Mrs. Thorpe, but we called her Miss Goodwin, and I left her widow to Mrs. Field.
And, so
and you have 50 years. 50 years she remained our friend, didn't she, mate?
Yes, lovely woman.
Lovely to her girls.
So Miss Fielding wanted an apprentice.
Yes.
Fielding wanted an apprentice.
Yes.
That was cheaper, and then she
trained
you up, and then you
left. Oh, no! I served my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
So then she was looking for just somebody. Somebody. One of the girls was leaving, and she just wanted somebody else to fill in.
And so, why did you go and work for somebody else?
Oh, because I don't like to tell the story about that.
Okay.
No, that was a misunderstanding with Miss Goodwin.
Yeah,
so I don't bring that up, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's why I went to Mrs. Fields, but I don't.
And how long did you work for Mrs. Fields?
Oh, right up till I got married, didn't I?
Yeah. I don't think you worked for her after you got married, did you?
No. I did kindergarten work up at Scottsdale. After I got married, I was offered a job up at the kindergarten at Scott Street Presbyterian Church. That was run by the Presbyterian Church, and Miss Biddle used to run it, and she lived in Saudi Street, so I used to go up there only half a day. We used to look after 30 children. 15 up the fence one day and get them down, and the other 15 were up the other end up the fence. It was lovely.
So they were a
cheap bunch. Oh, well, they were just children. You know, from what were they, three to five year old. Yeah.
And did you, so then you've seen them growing up, I imagine?
Oh, yes, some of them, yes. But they've all moved away. A lot of the mothers I knew, Yeah, they still, if I go over to Ormond Road, they say hello, the mothers. Hello, Elsa, how are you?
Mm.
You know, I remember their children going to kindergarten.
And how long did you live there for?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, about three or four years.
Mm.
Yes.
And the mum's still
living? Yes. Yeah, I still meet them now and then, you know, and I say hello, which is very nice of them. But then a lot moved away, of course. Yes, that's what I did. Yeah. In between the Angling Club and the Garden Club and the Historical Society.
So tell us about the Garden Club.
Oh, what's her name? Oh, Peg Durain. Oh, the council started it. The Kilda Council started it.
Yeah.
At Neighbourhood House down here in
Tennyson Street.
And this Peg Durain and her husband decided they'd put in for it, and we got a little notice if anybody wanted to join the gardeners club, so we went round. And we had many happy years around there, didn't we? And we've still got friends from the garden club.
And what sorts of things did you do there?
Oh, well, we, well, they taught us all about growing plants, and we, and flower arrangements, we learnt all that. And then the St Kilda Council used to have, down the botanical gardens, have a, like a festival in the botanical garden in Blessington Street, and we always had a stall there and sold our plants. We used to put up our plants and sell them to make money for our club.
Mm.
We even were down the Esplanade. Many, once a year we'd have our garden club down there.
So were there equal number of men and women in
there? Yes, that's right. And what we made through selling our plants, we used to have bus trips. We'll go up on Puffin's Billy and things like that.
And we go out for lunch?
Yeah, lunch and Christmas. Mm-hmm.